Welcome back, everybody, to A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh.
And I'm Tom.
And today, we're heading to the Lilat system.
Oh, yeah, baby.
And we are going to be talking about the sequel to Star Fox, and that is Star Fox 64. We missed 63 Star Foxes somewhere along the lines.
Yeah, but they weren't anything to write home about. The 64th time was the charm.
Okay. The 64th entry is the one that we care about the most.
Exactly. Like any great franchise. Marvel, you'll get there soon.
Sooner or later.
This game was actually recommended by a donor during our Extra Life charity stream weekend on November 7th. So we want to thank the big time, big dollar donor who, helped us towards our charitable goal. And Josh, can they still, as of this recording, pitch in towards that?
As of now, until the end of the year, December 31st, you can actually head on over to our Extra Life page, which is going to be down in the description, and you can donate money. And you can pick a game for an upcoming episode at the $100 tier. However, you don't need to donate that much. Any amount would be wonderful to be donated to the big, beautiful Absolutely. Kids out there.
Mm-hmm. Even $1 goes a long way. So thanks to everyone who has donated. Thanks to any future donors who maybe get inspired by this episode. But back to business, Josh. I'm pretty sure that this is yet another game for me this year that you have zero familiarity with. Is that what you said?
Yeah, so I have played this game before in the past. I never went and dove deep into it. I just remember it being pretty much another version of the original Star Fox, which... we'll get into that then. But yeah, I mean, this was pretty much my first time playing it from beginning to end.
Okie dokie. Okie dokie. So yeah, we're talking about Star Fox 64, the sci-fi rail shooter starring Fox McCloud and friends, a band of mercenary space heroes setting out to save the Lilat system from the evil scientist Andross. And, you know, Josh, I think it's fair to say that even probably with your limited play history, this is a pretty prevalent game, would you say, in gaming pop culture?
Oh yeah, I think this game, people talk about it as one of the best games that came out on the N64, and it even got a remake on the 3DS because people were clamoring for some sort of Star Fox game. We got Star Fox Zero, but people really just wanted another Star Fox 64. And what did Nintendo decide to do? We'll just give you the same game again. That's fine. Just with 3D graphics. And I will say the 3D graphics works really well.
So just for clarification, you know, in preparing for this episode, Josh played the N64 version and I played the 3DS remake just to get a little bit of both worlds. And yeah, the 3DS, despite it that being its main feature, I can't say many games really wowed people enough, or at least me in particular, to say I need to have the 3D on. But yeah, in the long history of the 3DS, even though glasses-free 3D was its main boastful gimmick, I feel like not a lot of gamers actually did care about whether or not it got utilized. Me in particular anyway. So the fact that Star Fox 64 3D had some pretty nifty depth perception with the space combat, I admired that. But yeah, we'll get into that later.
Yeah, we'll definitely get into that. I will say, let's just start it right off at the beginning. This game actually had like a full-length story leading up to it, and I was actually shocked. And I was like, man, like they're going all out and they're actually giving us like some history on, you know, Pepe, on Andross, on, you know, the original group that went in to fight Andross. They come back to find out that Fox's dad died. You're just like her father. But I was shocked about how much story they gave us at the beginning of this game.
Yeah, Nintendo, and, you know, particularly creator Shigeru Miyamoto, you know, they're not always big on story and lore and all that. You know, they kind of like making big broad worlds and letting players find their own kind of fun in it. But Star Fox, as you did say, has a pretty detailed backstory with, you know, a setup and stakes for the characters coming in. And it just makes the game that much more interesting. So we're talking backstory. I think we have to acknowledge the backstory of this franchise. So we joked at the top about how many numbered sequels in Star Fox 64 is, but in reality, this is the second released Star Fox game but the third one overall that was developed.
Yes.
Yes. So, Josh, as you were kind of mentioning, the first title, Star Fox, on the Super Nintendo, did you play that game growing up?
Yes, I played that game a lot. And okay. It was one of the games that utilized the FX chip in the actual Super Nintendo itself. And that game was just mind-blowing to me, just what it looked like at the time. There was nothing like it out there.
Yes, very revolutionary for its 3D polygonal graphics at the time. I did not interact with Star Fox, the original one, at all until I got the Super NES Classic. And just in my personal opinion, I cannot play that game because of how much it looks like ass.
Oh, yeah. No, it has not aged well graphically. It's almost like going back and playing like Final Fantasy VII on a PlayStation 1. It's just like, ugh. But like there's smoother versions of it out there. Just it's not super appealing to the eyes, and it handles pretty clunky. But you figure in the early 90s, this was like mind-blowing to people.
Right, right. You know. They were dropping their Dunkaroos and their Capri Suns and going, oh my gosh.
Am I having a sugar rush right now? No.
is this the glucose hallucination?
This fox is talking to me.
So that game made waves, had a lot of notoriety. They instantly started developing a sequel. The sequel was actually began development 2 days before Star Fox on the SNES formally launched. I feel like most gamers know the history of Star Fox 2. If you don't, there's a billion YouTube videos on it. The too long didn't read version is they made a more robust sequel with a lot more features, but it was finished so close to the release of the N64. Miyamoto didn't want a Super Nintendo game trying to do full 3D so close to the advent of the N64 with its, you know, revolutionary 3D graphics. So right. He was just like, we're just going to cancel this game and bury it. And then it did not actually see the light of day officially until the Super NES Classic was released. So Star Fox 64, they just plowed right ahead and started developing this. And funnily enough, they took a couple of the big kind of next level features that they were going to put in Star Fox 2, and they put it into this game. The multiplayer, the addition of your arch nemesis Starwolf and his crew, and all range mode, which is the kind of combat arenas that where you can control the R-Wing in full kind of 360 degree 3D motion. All three of those modes or features were brought over from Star Fox 2 into Star Fox 64.
Yeah, one thing I want to add too is on Netflix, there's a documentary series called High Score. And if you haven't watched it, I believe episode 4 or episode 5, they go deep into the making of how Star Fox was created in it. So it's a good portion of the episodes actually dedicated to the making of Star Fox and how these two guys figured out how to make a linear level inside of a Super Nintendo console. So if you have Netflix subscription, which everyone probably does, hop on and watch the episode. It's about half an hour, 45 minutes long, but it's really worth it if you want to just see how Miyamoto got the idea of flying through like tunnels and getting the rings and stuff like that too. It's really, really unique.
Nice. Oh, that's awesome. I've had that show recommended to me a couple times, including by you. If you don't have Netflix, Josh's login and password will be in the description, so you can borrow his account.
Yeah, absolutely.
But just a couple little other tidbits on the design and kind of development of the game before we jump in, Josh. So, Josh, are you a fan of Thunderbirds?
Thunderbirds it was a really cool show. I believe it came out in the 60s or 70s. It was puppets. And you could see like a lot of Team America came from it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But
if you hadn't been aware, I was going to drop the Team America reference. But yes, basically marionette action dramas, as Josh said, Thunderbirds being the big one. And then Team America was paying homage to that. So interestingly enough, in my research for Star Fox, I found out that Miyamoto was a big fan of Thunderbirds. And the reason that the Star Fox crew and all the characters in this game have the kind of Flappy Bobby heads and their kind of animations are so simple is because they were also paying homage to Thunderbirds. So that was a deliberate stylistic choice, and I just love that because yeah.
Thunderbirds was a cool idea and a cool show.
A couple other bits of sci-fi homage throughout this game. Did you get to the level Katina by chance, Josh?
So what one's that? Because I took a specific way.
Okay.
Yeah. I took two paths. I beat the game twice, and I took two slightly different paths.
Okay. So Katina would be the third planet if you get through Sector Y, and it's got a pyramid in the middle, and you are fighting alongside friendly AI. So, like, there's multiple good guy ships mixed in with the bad guy ships.
I don't believe so. I think the third one for me might have been the tank level, where the train...
You're talking about Macbeth, that the planet Macbeth, yes. But for clarification, we're talking about references. Katina is just basically a big Independence Day reference. There's a giant flying saucer that hovers over a landmark, and if you fail the mission, it shoots down a laser and blows it up. And you know, all the creators have said, "Yeah, we were totally aping Independence Day. Cool, we love that movie."
Yeah, that's cool.
And then multiple little Star Wars references, you know, characters saying, "I've got a bad feeling about this." the end game medal ceremony where Fox and his crew walk down like a long ceremonial hallway with people saluting on the side right out of the end of A New Hope.
Yeah.
So it's a very fun game that plays around with references, but has its own strong identity.
What's your history with this, Tom? You talked with mine pretty much being non-existent. What's your history with Star Fox?
Oh, man. So I got in on this game early. When I first found out about it, I just thought it looked like the coolest thing in the world. It was one of those situations where neither I nor my family could like afford it for a while. So I used what little money I did have to buy the player's guide. This happened a couple times in my childhood. I had the player's guide, and that's how I lived the game. And I was reading it religiously and like falling asleep with it and everything. And then by the time I got the game, I like knew all the secrets. I was going for everything, you know. So this was a big one for me. I actually took this in a show and tell in third grade. I was like, "This is Star Fox. It's got a rumble pack."
It came with the rumble pack, right?
Yeah, that was. So this is the first game that used the rumble pack. It came packaged with the rumble pack, and it added force feedback to your N64 controller, and that kind of launched the rumble as a feature in a controller wave that we would see go through generation after generation. Sony quickly put rumble capacity into the DualShock, and you know, it just took off from there. So that was a pretty big landmark in terms of gaming features. And I think for most people, Josh, a lot of them may have been introduced to this through the infamous promotional VHS tape that was sent out to homes of Nintendo subscribers. Have you seen this?
I've seen the tape. Mm-hmm. I don't own it. I have the Majora's Mask one. I do not have the actual Star Fox one.
Okay, yeah. See, I got a handful of the tapes myself growing up. I got the Pokemon tape. I got the Banjo-Kazooie and Diddy Kong tapes. But I for some reason did not get the Star Fox tape, but it's a very cheesy 90s little skit where representatives from Sony and Sega kidnap a Nintendo employee and interrogate him and force him to tell them about Star Fox or else they'll torture a little Mario doll. And it's just like the best kind of 90s cheesy. Check it out on YouTube if you can.
Will do. Will do. Mm-hmm. Let's hop into the game though, Tom. So
yes.
One thing I did notice is the first couple levels of this game are practically remakes of the first game.
Right. Well, this is intended to just literally be a reimagining of Star Fox on the SNES. Mm-hmm.
And I will say, for playing it, it like held up. The controls were fantastic. I was surprised with how smooth everything felt, how much in control mm-hmm. I felt of the ship, where like I was looking like, okay, this is where I'm going to be aiming. I shoot ahead, and, you know, you kind of lead your shots a little bit. Like I was thoroughly impressed with how well this game still holds up 23 years after release.
Heck yeah. I will still bust out my N64 copy of this every once in a while and just play it for the sake of, like, you know, seeing if I can top my best score. I'm sure similar to you playing Rock Band, you know, and never fails, no matter how old of an N64 controller I'm playing on, precision in the controls is always 100%. And you can tell they put a lot of effort into the flight controls of this game.
It really is that Nintendo seal of quality. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. it's... Nintendo games have some sort of just a perfectionness to it that it won't ship without the game being flawless. And I mean, it's pretty, I was shocked with how well it was.
It's what's really noteworthy when Nintendo games do kind of fall short of being completely just good, because when Nintendo does release a stinker, it raises even bigger of an eyebrow. It's like, what happened that this just doesn't work, you right. know? So I know exactly what you mean by the Nintendo seal of quality. So the first mission has a format that's similar to most of this game. It's on rails, linear level. You are just constantly flying forward and engaging with enemies all around you. And your squad mates are AI-controlled little side characters that can both help you and require your help. And there are branching paths within certain levels, as there are branching paths in the overall level structure. You start in Corneria, and then from there, it depends on what kind of objectives you complete on each level that'll take you to different planets within the system, all with the ultimate goal of getting to the final planet, which is Venom, where the evil scientist Andross is operating out of.
So I streamed this over on twitch.tv/castofthepast. And I did an entire playthrough of my first run. And I was like, oh, this, I wonder how long this is going to take me. And I finished it in like 50, 55 minutes-ish. And I made a comment towards the end. I'm like, I'm trying to figure out why everyone wants to go see Tom Hardy in Venom. I just couldn't understand it.
He's just so charming. I don't know. But he has great chemistry with himself. But yeah, I watched about like half of your first stream because I didn't want to spoil all of your opinions for the actual show, but you were doing pretty good for like a first time playthrough. And so what did you think about the paths that you took? I'm sure you noticed. I noticed like in your playthrough. Now, I'm not,
you know where I messed up. You know where I messed up.
It's not that it's messed up, but I'm sure you started to realize that for each level, the end status screen will either say mission complete or mission accomplished.
I didn't realize that, and, no.
Okay. So it's basically a signifier of whether you did all of the primary objectives. And what's cool about this game is that it doesn't like outright tell you all the primary objectives. It invites you to explore the levels on each playthrough and figure out how to get through that. So on Corneria, there is basically two ways off that planet. You either save Falco and fly through a series of like rock loops. And if you do that, Falco becomes impressed and he's like, I found the target. And then he leads you to a different boss that you shoot down and you get mission accomplished. Now, if you fail to save Falco or you fail to fly through these loops, you just fight a giant robot and then you get mission complete and you go to the next level. Either way you win, you know, either way, yeah. It's a victory for you, the player. It's not like the game doesn't like scold you for not doing something right. It gives you just, you know, an alternate ending.
So, and that's what I was getting frustrated with, because it was the same way that the original Star Fox was, where, hey, we're going to show you the map. We're going to show you that there's three different directions you can go coming out of this level. And I always kept going to the same path. And I'm like, what am I doing wrong? And if I had a guide, I probably would be able to do it. I was thinking overall, like, you just need to kill a certain amount of enemies in the level and that would unlock where you need to go. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to try my next playthrough, destroy everything I possibly can, fly as perfect as I can, maybe not get hit, maybe save all of the people, not have them get hit, whatever. And nothing happened. I'm like, okay, I don't get it. And then halfway through my playthrough, I ended up taking a different path. And man, did I take the wrong different path when I did it.
Okay. Interesting. So that can happen for, you know, anybody. What the cool thing is that you know, like, there's no just... There is a decent handful of multiple ways you can get through this game, and all come down to choice and awareness of your environment. So, Josh, I hear what you're saying. I'm coming at this as somebody who has kind of memorized this game backwards and forwards. So, to me, it doesn't seem like there's cause for frustration. But I get what you're saying because, as I said earlier, the game doesn't tell you certain things. And if you're just jumping into it, maybe it can become a little frustrating and a little bit like, oh, I'm bummed out that I'm always taking the same path, you know?
Right. Because if the game doesn't tell you or you don't have a guide, like, you're constantly in this repetitive loop now over and over and trying to figure out, what am I doing wrong? What am I doing wrong? Like, how do I get over there? And I'm not going to say that hindered my experience with the game because there's so many different ways you could still go after this one level or after that next level or so on and so on. And I understand, like, you're looking at it the same way when we played Resident Evil 2. I knew that game inside and out. I knew the different scenarios. I knew where everything was. Like, I understood, coming from someone who has a lot of history with the game, right? You've grown up with it. This is my first time really dissecting the game as it is. I still had fun with it. But let me ask you, though.
Yeah.
Going back similarly with Resident Evil 2, is there a particular pattern that you need to take to get the full complete story to this game?
Okay, yes. So there are two endings, technically, to Star Fox. And what they come down to is basically which side of Venom you get to. If you are looking at the map of the galaxy, just as it is when it loads, there's basically the top path and the bottom path. If you come to Venom through the bottom path, you'll have a linear on-rails level where you'll be blasting through enemies, flying through canyons and stuff, and then you'll fight first a giant robot that's like kind of running through this temple, and then you will fight Andross, but upon fighting him, you discover he's a giant robot head. And then after you beat him and the credits roll, during the final, like the end, Venom's face pops up and he starts laughing. So that's meant to be the incomplete ending, where it's like, you saved the day, but you didn't really stop Andross. The, what I guess you can call true ending, is if you go up through the harder planets, get to Venom from the other side, the climactic level is an all-range mode battle against Starwolf in their upgraded ships. And if you beat Starwolf, you fight the real version of Andross, where after you defeat his kind of monkey appearance, you find out that all Andross really is a giant brain with little eyeballs attached via like lightning bolts. And you fight him in an all-range mode battle, and then you have to make an escape from an exploding base let out by your dead ghost dad, and then you actually beat the game.
So I got the first one.
Okay.
Both times I played.
Okay. We can kind of talk about maybe favorite and least favorite planets. So you mentioned that even though you got to the same version of Venom, you did not have the same exact path both times?
No. So,
okay.
I did Corneria, of course. I did the asteroid field. And I think after that was the tank level.
After that, if you're going down that route, it would have been Fortuna, which is renamed Ficina in the 3DS remake. But that's the snowy planet where you have a fight with Starwolf.
Okay, so I fought them.
Okay. Now, did you ever lose to Starwolf in that fight?
No. No. Okay.
So if you beat Starwolf, then you're going to go up to Solar, which is like the sun in this solar system within this game.
Yeah. That's where I went. And I didn't understand what was happening at first, and then I went, oh my God, I'm burning up. I'm burning up. Like, so I had to constantly keep flying up to the top of the planet. And I'm like,
yeah.
Oh my, like, I didn't die, which I was 100% shocked about. I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know how I'm doing. I just constantly keep blowing stuff up and regenerating my health. Keep doing it over and over again. Just stay alive.
Yeah. And you're literally flying just over fields of lava because you're flying on a sun.
Yeah.
And like he said, the closer your R-wing, the ship gets to the lava, the faster your health depletes. So it's, you gotta fly towards the top of the screen as often as you can.
So that's where I made my, that's when I said I went the wrong direction when we were doing it, because I started panicking when I got to that level. So that's where I thought I made a giant mistake when I ended up going to that planet. So now on my second playthrough, it sent me back up there. However, I hit the start button and I scrolled down to the bottom and it let me choose a different path.
Yeah.
So it let me go back and I was like, oh, well, I can go this way then. And that's where I ended up in the fight where Slippy got knocked out down into the planet.
So that's Sector X.
Yeah.
Yes. And then that, of course, with Slippy being knocked out, would take you to the planet Titania. And that's one of two tank levels within this game. And I believe you did both from what I watched of your stream. There's the planet Macbeth, where you're a tank that's fighting a huge train and you're chasing it and fighting it as it goes along. And then Titania, it's this desert world where you're navigating around monsters and enemy ships, and you ultimately fight a giant creature that's holding Slippy's ship in its claws.
Right.
So those are the two tank levels. What did you think about tank combat within this game?
I didn't mind it. It took me a little bit to figure out that I had to hover in order to fly up to do stuff. But once I figured that out, I'm like, oh, okay, it's pretty simple. I didn't mind it as much. I still 100% preferred the flying levels, of course. I thought my favorite flying levels were the dogfights with Star Wars.
The all range mode kind of.
Yeah, levels. I really liked those because that made you feel like you were a ace pilot almost, where you were in that Top Gun dogfighting X-Wing style, X-Wing versus TIE fighter match. Don't get me wrong, the on-rail shooters were still great. Mm-hmm. It reminded me a lot of like Panzer Dragoon and stuff, but it was fine. I mean, I understood that was what Star Fox was. Those levels, adding those two new things, it didn't hinder my experience with it. I still enjoyed the levels themselves, but
yeah. Terrific. No, that's absolutely terrific. Yeah, I can honestly say that, you know, there's two tank levels. I only really like one. I only like Macbeth. I only really do Titania if I'm going for like a medal run and it's like, well, I gotta do that planet to get all the medals. Otherwise, I really avoid it. So there's a third vehicle type in addition to the tanks and the R-Wing that I imagine you didn't get to based off the path you took, but that is the Blue Marine Sub, which is available in the only water-based planet of the game called Aquas. And let me tell you, that is arguably for me maybe the first or second hardest level in this game, just because it's such a radically different way of controlling the game than the gameplay, and the enemies are a lot tougher, and it's like in this pitch black ocean bottom, so like everything's very hard to see. I think it's a cool concept, but I'm also just kind of glad it was one and done, you know.
Yeah. Do you think that they were using that as an experimental level for lighting on the N64?
Could have been. I mean, it is gorgeous when like certain kinds of enemies with like light beams on their heads burst out from the darkness, you know, it is pretty interesting.
Okay.
So that's actually a pretty good.
Because you think about, we talked about it in the Luigi's Mansion level, how they were basing it all around the lighting and stuff like that. Well, is this the early stages of where the lighting came from for Luigi's Mansion?
You know, that's an excellent point. I have to start thinking more about how a certain game's maybe innovation was part of Nintendo evolving towards something, or any game developer, you know, like I feel like I have to take a more closer look at like, oh, this is doing X. Is it doing X for a reason? You know?
Right.
So that's basically the gist of the single player campaign, you know, beyond doing the story or trying to get to the complete ending. The other thing you can aim for are medals on every planet. Basically each level has an enemy count where if you reach it, you'll get a medal. On average, it's usually about 150 enemies, but certain levels have different things. And if you get all the medals in single player, you will unlock expert mode, which is just the main campaign again, but there are more enemies and your R-Wing is far less durable. Basically, if you hit any physical obstruction once, you'll lose a wing. There's no cushions. And if you beat expert mode with all medals, you'll unlock bonuses for multiplayer. Multiplayer, as it stands, when you start, you're just in an R-Wing. But by getting medals and beating modes, you get, ultimately, the tank. And even on foot, you can play the characters on foot, which is bazookas. Like, okay. And it's really, it's honestly really amusing having a match where you're like Fox on foot versus Falco in an R-Wing, because the R-Wing can like barely see the players on foot, so it's almost unfair. And you're just with the bazooka, like pew 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 pew, shooting down R-Wings. It's hilarious.
So, while we're talking about the characters themselves, so who's your favorite of the cast?
Fox is obviously one of my boys from Smash Brothers, but he's, you know, he's got like this positive, you know, can-do personality, so he's someone cool to like, I think. I honestly think it's hard to nail down because every single character in this game just has so much personality and charisma and memorable lines. I would probably say my favorite characters though are Fox, Andrew from Star Wolf, and the character of Bill the Bulldog, who I know you didn't get to meet based on the path you took, but basically he's like a friend of Fox's that you get to fight with on the Independence Day planet. What about you, Josh?
So, I love Falco. I always have. I always will. I liked him even in the original game, just the cockiness to him. He's just so cool. And I like him in Smash. I think his character design is one of the coolest as well. And I like how he makes that little, well, no future spoilers, but he appears in Star Fox Adventures.
Yeah, he has a very, very cool moment in that game. Yeah, I would say Falco has some of the best lines in the game. This game is just insanely quotable. That's just something I need to say. Something I was heartbroken by relating to Falco. So in N64, one of the lines Falco will spew anytime you accidentally shoot him, he'll go, "Hey Einstein, I'm on your side." And I say that, like, I'll say that to my fiance Mary every once in a while, you know, like, just because we both love this game. But in the 3DS remake, he says, "Hey genius, I'm on your side." Oh. And I'm like, oh, I really want to know why they removed that. I can't see how that's offensive, but
so one other thing about the lines. I mean, this game, even in the original, it had it. One of my favorite things is the good luck. I do that all the time when people top are like, "Oh, I'm gonna go do something." I'm gonna go, good luck. I love it. Now I do have a question. This is gonna be a deep Nintendo lore. Is this a new version of Rob the Robot?
Mean Rob the NES robot?
Yes, because in the game it's R.O.B.64.
So what I know about Rob is that in the Japanese version, his name is Nus, N-U-S, and it's Nus64. And that's because it was referencing the original code name of the Nintendo 64, which was the Ultra 64. So he's Nintendo Ultra System 64. Maybe in calling him Rob, they were just, the American team was trying to pay a homage to Rob the Robot. I can't really say, but it makes sense. Like, I could see it.
And the next thing, and it's something I wish that we actually had in the N64 version, is did you see what was included in the PAL version of Star Fox 64?
No.
There's an alternative voice mode that you can do, and it's called Lilat Language, where it's them talking like they did in the Super Nintendo version of the game.
Oh, the blah, 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 blah,
yeah.
Blah, 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 blah,
blah, blah, blah, blah, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's the entire game with them using that with the subtitles on the screen. And I was like, why couldn't we get something like that?
I think that'd be really fun and charming, no lie. You know, as a Banjo-Kazooie fan, you know I love my animal gibberish.
They see, overseas always gets the cooler Nintendo stuff than we do. Do they hate America so much?
Club Nintendo in Europe, they get the better swag. But, you know, I do have to say, for the time, you know, this was a fully voice acted video game, Josh. beginning to end, full dialogue, they managed to cram this into 4 megabytes of space, which I know today sounds laughable, but back then it was like, oh, how did you get that on one cartridge, you know?
Yeah.
Fully voice acted, and the original actor of Fox actually voiced the character in Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, so he's still sticking around. In the 3DS version, there is a noticeable change. Obviously, I mentioned that there's some dialogue differences, but, you know, they couldn't get all the original actors back, I imagine. So they have some who are trying to do their best recreation, and then there's some characters who are just outright doing brand new stuff. And, like, for me, being, like, a lifelong fan, like, hearing certain changes, like, the way, like, Wolf McDonald sounds in Star Wolf, it's like, ah, you don't sound like that. What's going on here?
Now, is the ones in the 3DS version the same ones that voiced in Smash Brothers?
No, because Wolf is too different from Smash Brothers, so I think maybe these were just, like, one-time things, you know?
So with that, let's do some closing statements here, Tom. Overall, Star Fox 64, would you recommend it?
I would recommend it, and part of why I want to, like, talk about it in closing is... this is probably just still the best Star Fox game you can play. You know, I wanted to talk in closing a bit about its legacy. There have been multiple sequels to Star Fox 64, but none of them have ever hit the same mark. You know, you have games that try to do too much that are different from Star Fox 64, such as, you know, Star Fox Adventures, which you mentioned briefly earlier, to try to become like a Zelda-esque adventure game. And then you had future titles like Star Fox Assault and Star Fox Zero, where it's like, we're giving you like close to what you wanted out of a Star Fox game, but we're still finagling with it. You know, we're doing weird stuff like, you know, having Fox get out of the R-Wing and do on foot combat.
It's the Nintendo rule. We'll give you what you want. However, it's that Nintendo rule, man. I've been saying it since, you know, Smash Brothers. We're going to give you this person in Smash Brothers. However, they're going to be a Mii costume. Like, it's...
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah. Like, the closest game I've seen get to the spirit of this is Star Fox Command on the Nintendo DS. But even that one has its own quirks. Like, it's timed missions with different kinds of ships that have different stats depending which ones you're using and everything. And I mean, I just speaking for me personally, but I think maybe I would kind of assume that the Star Fox fan base just wants to go back to the on rails shooter just with modern technology. And I assume that because, you know, each of the games have just not been that much of a success, to the point where sometimes I get worried that, like, Star Fox might be on the verge of becoming, like, F-Zero, you know, like a franchise that Nintendo just stops caring about. So that's a personal opinion of mine on, like, the legacy of Star Fox. What do you think about how the franchise has come?
So I agree that it's very worrisome that this franchise is one more bad game away from being just forgotten about. Do you think Star Fox would work better as a downloadable game, not an indie title, but a more of a shorter experience than an actual full $60 release?
Possibly.
You think, like, maybe like a $20 or $30 downloadable game on the eShop?
Yeah, I think it could. I just think it needs to get back to the spirit of what made it great. It's what you said at the top: precision flight controls, fun combat, and just engaging levels. I think going too much with it, like with the gamepad on the Wii U, or with too many extra play modes in the GameCube version, is just keep it simple. This is not a game that needs to be overdone.
Yeah, because wasn't part of the Wii U like actual motion controls, like flying around?
It was a complicated nightmare of like you were looking at the TV for the main game, but to fire and aim, you had to look at the gamepad and, like, you were, like, gyroscopically controlling the R-Wing with the gamepad, but aiming with the sticks to control the reticle and fire. And so like you're constantly looking up and down between the TV where you're flying and the screen where you're aiming. And it was just like, this is such a bad idea.
Yeah. Was there a first person mechanic to Star Fox 64?
Yes, if you want, you could have zoomed in and just experienced the game from the cockpit. Okay. I've never personally enjoyed that mode, and I've never used it myself.
I didn't remember if there was or not, but...
Okay.
Yeah.
But Josh, overall, would you recommend this game?
So, this game on the N64 was a wonderful experience, and I would highly recommend it. I really enjoyed my time out. Like I said, I got frustrated because I didn't know what direction to take or what way to go at some point in time. But this game, for how long ago it came out, how well it controls, still holds up to this day as a fantastic gaming experience. So I highly recommend this game.
Awesome to hear.
And that's huge praise for me coming from an N64 title.
He hates N64 as a console, so yes, to hear him recommend a game is a milestone on this show. But yes, I would definitely recommend playing the original version, the 3DS version. It's very fun. It's a good remake, in my opinion. The one gripe I have against it is just with the small kind of hand space. You know, there's not enough real estate for hands, and for me, this is a big button mashing, like my hands are really active kind of game, and you know, my hands got sore from trying to hold the 3DS. So if you can play this game with a controller, I think that's the way to go.
If you can't get an N64, a Rumble Pack, a controller, and a copy of the game, just play it on the 3DS.
Like, there you go.
You can get a 3DS pretty cheap. Grab the game for 15, 20 bucks, and you're golden.
There you go.
But
there you go.
But that's it for A Cast of the Past. Thank you for joining us. If you like this content, make sure to follow us on all of our podcast streaming services, as well as on Facebook and Twitch and YouTube and everywhere you can find us at Cast of the Past. Our video podcast is on YouTube. Our audio podcast is on Apple, is on Stitcher, is on Spotify, is on Deezer, is on Audioboom. Anywhere you can find a podcast, we are there. The Triforce with the Flux Capacitor. But until next time, this has been Josh.
And this has been Tom.
And we'll see you in the future.